This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for being with us today. You've been hearing about Colorado Eye Consultants now for several months, and if it's the first time you've heard me mention them, several months ago I did cataract surgery with them and Dr. Fish, and since then we have visited with several of the folks here, the team here at Colorado Eye Consultants, and it's my privilege today to have Dr. Carl Rebhun with us today. So, Dr. Rebhun, good to see you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
You know, I've been able to visit with you a little bit before we came on air here, and I've learned this over these last couple of months. The eye is pretty fascinating, number one. I mean,
yes. Just
all the different things I've learned, you know, in these few months just about it. And so we're going to talk about something a little different today from the cataract surgery and things we've been talking about, and that's oculofacial plastic surgery, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Also known as oculoplastic surgery.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, let's talk about you a little bit and let folks know, but board certified.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's talk about some of your credentials.
Sure.
Okay.
So I... In order to get to where I am now, I went to college, undergrad. I did my undergrad at Vanderbilt University. That's where I studied neuroscience, and I kind of first got my glimpse into how the eye works during that training.
Mm-hmm.
I was interested in medicine back then, then went to medical school up at Tufts University, did a year of ophthalmology research, actually, because I didn't know I wanted to do ophthalmology until relatively later on in my training during my third or fourth year. So I did an additional year in research, actually researching the retina. And then after that, I did a residency at New York University at NYU in ophthalmology. And then after that, I did two additional years in oculofacial plastic surgery fellowship in Los Angeles. And during that process, in order to become board certified as an ophthalmologist, you have to, you know pretty much everything there is to know about the eye and how to operate on it, how to treat it medically, how to evaluate it, know other things around about systemic things about the body that might affect the eye or vice versa.
Sure.
So being board certified essentially means that we study for quite a long time. We take a written exam that you have to pass by doing that written exam, and then you do an oral exam where the presenters present cases to you. And you answer them one by one in a very stressful environment. But once you get through it and you become board certified, it means a lot.
Wow, that's so cool. Now, I was reading some things in your bio, and one thing that really stuck out to me, when anytime you talk about any kind of plastic surgery, you talk about getting natural results. And you and I were talking a little bit before we came on air. That's key to you. So kind of explain, because I think we've all seen the ones that didn't look so natural.
Correct. The two examples, and I apologize if they're listening, is Nancy Pelosi and Nancy Pelosi is kind of the main one. But natural results, that's kind of the most important thing for me and my patients. If you're coming to me looking for something, you know, you look one way and you want to say, I want to look like that person, and I take a look at that person, they look completely different from you, I'm going to say, you know, I'm not your person. But we're going to make you look natural. And what that means is we're going to take what you have underneath, maybe you have a little bit of extra skin on the upper eyelids, a little bit of bags underneath, and we're going to, what I do is I basically adjust that, maybe turn back the clock a few years, so you look like you did a few years ago, but not like a different person.
Right.
And that's the most important thing. In addition to that, you know, having an ophthalmology background, caring for the eyes and the surface of the eyes, I know how important it is to protect those eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the ocular health and looking natural, those are the two main things that I tell my patients when I'm evaluating them for surgery.
Right. So how does this differ from just normal plastic surgery then?
Yeah. So plastic surgery, there's different types of plastic surgery, but general plastic surgery, they do, sometimes they can do general surgery residencies and then do additional residency or fellowship in plastic surgery over a period of 8 years or so. And then they can do further subspecialty training in facial plastic surgery. But plastic surgeons do plastic surgery all over the body. They do leg surgery, breast surgery, belly surgery, arm surgery, and they do facial surgery as well. What I do is just focus on the face, and more specifically the upper face and the eyes. Right. So, I do have some training in sort of plastic surgery of the rest of the body. We do take skin grafts from all over the body. Sometimes we take a little bit of fat and put it inside the face too, around the eyes to help rejuvenate and reconstruct those areas. But the main difference is just the super subspecialization of oculoplastic surgery, the plastic surgery around the eyes and the upper face.
Right. Now, a lot of people may think this is all just cosmetic, but it's really not. Sometimes it's medically necessary, and we were discussing that. Yeah. Explain where that line is drawn.
Yeah, I mean, quite often, people not only do they look better when I do surgery, but they see better and they feel better. The main thing that I see people for in terms of medically necessary procedures are droopy eyelids. Mm-hmm. There's different things that go into droopy eyelids, and I explain this to my patients to educate them when I see them. The main thing is the eyebrow can be droopy, and that can sort of allow more skin over the surface of the eye. And then there's the extra skin between the eyebrow and the eyelid. And then there's the eyelid position itself, like where the lashes are. Sometimes those lashes can become are kind of droopy, and they make you look sleepy. And those lashes can cover, the eyelid can cover your pupil. So essentially, you can't lift your eyes up high enough for you to see. Sometimes your eyelid, where those lashes are, is in an okay position, but there's so much skin, or your brows are so low, that skin and your eyebrow is essentially overhanging your lashes. And that can affect your upper peripheral visual field and what you can see in the world. I just had a patient this morning who I did a droopy eyelid repair on. And, I asked him how he was doing and if he felt like his eyelids were more open, because they look more open to me. But I want to know it here from the patient too.
Sure.
And he said that he was in his kitchen, and all of a sudden he looked up and he saw something in his cabinet that he had totally forgotten was there for years and years and years. So that was, that makes it all worth it.
Boy, it can be life changing for some
100%.
People.
Yeah. And as we were, talking about before we got on the air, I had another patient a couple patients recently who had essentially paralysis or drooping due to a nerve damage after they had a brain tumor removed on the left side of their face, and their eyebrow was totally droopy. They couldn't lift their eyebrow even if they tried to, because the muscle is just totally paralyzed. And they couldn't drive, because they can't, if they try to look to their left, they can't see anything. All they're looking at is their eyebrow and their skin.
Wow.
So, what I do is I remove some tissue and some muscle above those eyebrows, remove some tissue of the upper eyelid skin, and pretty immediately they were able to see more light and drive again.
All right. Again, Dr. Carl Rebhun is with us. It's Colorado Eye Consultants. Their number is 303-730-0404. You can check them out at ColoradoEyeConsultants.com. So what's that initial consult look like?
Yeah. So when someone comes to see me, the main thing, they come into our office, my medical assistants bring them back, and we ask them what they're here for. If they say that they're here for, a droopy eyelid, we kind of go down one route. If they're here for tearing, which is another thing that I deal with, we go down another route. So generally, my medical assistant will get a brief history of exactly what's going on. They'll take some photos if it does have to do with droopy eyelids or something like that. I'll take a look at those photos. They'll tell me a little bit about what's going on. And then I go in and talk with the patient. I always like to hear it in the patient's own words, just so that nothing's lost in translation. And also to, show them that I'm a person too, and just to establish a rapport, show them that I try to be friendly, at least.
Sure.
to show them that I'm friendly, and that this is kind of a joint venture between me and them. And then, if it's about droopy eyelids or blocked vision, I do a folio evaluation. I look at their eyebrow position, their eyelid skin position. I make sure they can close their eyes. I look at the tension of the upper lids, of the lower lids. I look at the whole face. I look to see if one side looks different than the other at baseline. I try to look at old photos if something looks different. And the reason for that is just to understand why the patient's there, and if my training and what I can offer will meet the patient's expectations.
Right.
Sometimes patients come in and they, you know, they think they're there for one thing. And like I mentioned before, it's all about looking natural. And they say that, you know, I want to look like this other person, but I take a look at one of their old photos and, you know, they've always looked like they do now, just a little bit different, a little
right.
bit less skin,
sure.
a little bit tighter. You know, we just kind of discuss what I can and can't do, for them to help them reach their goals.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can't reach their goals, I'll tell people.
Sure.
And I think that's one thing that, you know, I've learned over the years. Some people will try to sort of overpromise and underdeliver. I try to do the opposite.
Yeah. Injectables, that's huge today.
Yeah.
One warning I think you'd be say to put out there, get those at a real medical facility
yeah.
and not, you know, just some place in a strip
yeah.
mall
yeah.
somewhere,
yeah.
right?
I've seen many patients regarding fillers in particular. We're talking about injectables. Injectables also includes Botox mm-hmm. or neurotoxin. But the main injectables that people are talking about are fillers, synthetic fillers. And synthetic fillers can be, you know, placed really well. Certain people are really, really good at it. You know, you can inject it into the cheeks, into the jaws to help with definition. When it comes to the eye area, I would avoid that unless it were an eye expert injecting it. I've seen many patients who have come to me and they say that, you know, and I look at them and they say they want surgery but for their lower eyelids. And to me, they look swollen where they have this bluish hue. And I'll ask them if they've ever had filler. And initially they'll say no. And then I say, are you sure about that? And then they say, oh, you know, maybe 5-10 years ago I had it. And I was like, that's it. The manufacturers tell you that it only lasts about 1 to 2 years. In the eye area, it lasts much longer than that.
Right.
The reason why is because the tissue around the eyelids is very thin, and how fillers work is they are hydrophilic, meaning they love water, and they absorb water, and they get into different layers of the eyelids, and they don't let it go for years and years and years, and people can get recurrent swelling. So more often than not, what I'm doing is actually dissolving that filler.
Oh, okay.
People come to me for lower eyelid surgery because they have these fluid-filled bags, and oftentimes I'll say, you know, we need to dissolve that filler first, which we have a medication to do that, and then we can sort of, sometimes they feel better once we get rid of that, and they're like, you know what, I'm happy at the way things look, and if they're happy, I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
Other times, we'll dissolve that filler, and they'll say, you know what, and we'll both see that, you know, they do have these under-eyelid bags. And then we'll, you know, proceed with surgery to improve those bags.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, are there times where people are thinking, hey, I just want to do the upper, but then you kind of say, hey, we're not going to accomplish what we do unless we do the lowers? Or I mean, is there times that we're just doing the upper
yeah.
works good for the patient?
100%. And that's where it comes into the goal of the patient.
Right.
So, you know. If they come in to me talking about the upper lids you know, that's what bothers them, I'll mention to them, I'll say, you know what, I'm just telling you this. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm just telling you it because it's a surgery that I do, and maybe you didn't know that I do these types of surgeries. But, you know, you might have noticed that you have some bagginess or some extra skin or whatever under the eyelids as well. If you want to, we can talk about it, and I can go into that procedure, what that might look like. If not, we don't have to.
Right.
Other times, patients come to me just talking about the lower lids, and I notice that the upper lids are a little bit droopy, and I mention it to them, and they say, you know what? I'm fine with my upper lids. Let's just talk about the lower lids. So if people are thinking about doing mm-hmm. You know, one or the other, I recommend doing it at the same time. It's just the recovery is essentially the same, so it's nice to just, you know, have
a little...
If you're going to do it, you're going to do it. Have
right.
a little downtime for, you know, 10 days. Or so, a week to 2 weeks, and just get it all done with.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was going next, recovery. Everybody
yeah.
wants to know, you know.
What. Yeah, so recovery with eyelid surgery is generally pretty easy. Pain control is not too bad. Usually people will just need Tylenol, if anything. Few patients I've seen today, post-operative patients who were, you know, I saw them a week ago, maybe took some Tylenol the day of the surgery, mm-hmm. and then never needed anything else. They're a little bit sore, but if anything,
right.
But they use a lot of ice for the first 3 days. That's the most important. You're going to be placing ice on your eyes about 20 minutes every hour while you're awake for the first 3 days. that helps you feel good, and it helps reduce the swelling and the bruising. And I always tell patients, as we were talking about a little bit before we came on the air, that you know, we have these quote-unquote rules to follow, but you know, if you stray a little bit away from them, if you know you miss an hour or whatever, it's not the end of the world. Okay. It's not the end of the world. These are not rules that you need to believe like the Bible. They're just kind of general guidelines, and if you do them, they're certainly going to help.
Right. And I tell you one thing I was just so impressed with is everything's here under one roof, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, the surgery center, everything that you've got, right? And so that's super convenient, not only for you as physicians, but also for us as patients.
100%. And, you know, and that's one of the main reasons why I love it here is that we have so many subspecialists under the same roof. My office now has moved upstairs to give them a little bit more space downstairs and me a little bit more space upstairs, so I kind of have my own little space. Before that happened, you know, we would often pull each other into rooms between patients, take a look, make sure everything's okay. Now that I'm upstairs, I still run downstairs and I'll talk to one of the other docs to take a look at a patient if they need to. For example, if they come to me, if a patient comes to me for an eyelid issue, but I also see that they have a cornea issue, a corneal abrasion, then I'll have them see one of our docs downstairs. I had a patient last week. Super sweet 99-year-old lady.
99.
You know, sharp as a tack. And she came in. Her. We didn't really talk about this thus far, but one of the other things I treat is ectropion, or lower lid looseness or turning outward, or entropion, where the lower lid sort of turns inward and your lashes can scratch your eye. Okay. She had ectropion, so the lower lid was loose and was turned out, so it looked all red and was irritated. And she was a new patient to our practice. And I took a look at her under our microscope, and I saw that she had a scratch on her cornea on the surface of the eyeball. Her vision was blurry because of that. So I immediately called Dr. Fish, actually, and I was like, you know, what do you recommend for this? And we had a plan, and I had him. I started the patient on that. I had the patient follow up this week with one of our cornea specialists, and she's doing great. And then once that's healed, I'll go ahead and heal the fix the eyelid. But it's sort of a multidisciplinary approach.
Sure.
Similar to an approach that you might see at in a university setting.
Mm-hmm. I was telling Lori Justin, your practice manager, you know, from day one that I called to setting an appointment to going through, you know, both eyes and the cataract surgery, and then just even coming in to do these interviews with you guys. Staff here is amazing.
Yeah.
So when I asked you this before, and I meant to ask you at the beginning, but I'll ask you now. So what made you, I mean, you could have gone anywhere, probably started your own practice, done whatever.
Yeah.
What made you join up with Colorado Eye Consultants?
Yeah, so when I was looking for jobs and positions during the end of my first year, beginning of my second year of fellowship, I was looking for a private practice, privately owned by physicians, that was not owned by private equity or a large corporation, and that was made up of good people, and that was in an awesome place. So Colorado Eye Consultants and coming to Denver certainly hit all those marks. I actually interviewed here when my daughter was 8 days old. I flew down for the day. Yeah, I felt very guilty because I got a full night of sleep. but anyway, yeah, so I flew down here for a day, met the team, drove around Denver. It's a beautiful city, looking at the mountains. I walked around the clinic, saw how everything worked. Everything was super organized.
Yeah.
It was nice. Everyone was smiling. The clinic is it's a relatively new clinic. It's been open just a couple of years now. Beautiful, new. The staff just knows what they're doing. They'll take the patients back. Everyone's got a smile on their face. And then once you're back, the doctors are just, everyone here who's worked here is just super nice and down to earth. They're not going to try to sell you something that you don't need. They're just good doctors and good people. And that's what sold me.
I think we've all seen the corporate takeovers, and man, every one of them I've ever seen or heard about care tanked.
Yeah.
It was more about numbers and profits and all the different
things.
Yeah,
correct.
And you guys have your own optical thing, just to touch on that too. You got your own optical thing here as well.
Yeah, so our optical shop is great. Whenever anyone asks for glasses, they sometimes ask me for glasses, and frankly, I'm a little bit, it's not kind of out of my purview these days. Sometimes they'll say, I got glasses with Dr. Fish or Dr. Stesia or someone else, and they're just not working appropriately. And I'll say, go downstairs, see your opticians. they know they have all these fancy devices to make sure that you're looking through the right part of your glasses, and they can adjust them, and they have a great selection. Actually, sometimes when I come in here over the weekend when I'm on call and I'm waiting for a patient to meet me here, if they have like an emergency or something, I'll go in and try some glasses on, but don't tell anyone I said that.
Yeah, okay. Real quick. Now, you mentioned, just to touch on a couple of things real quick. You mentioned that tiering.
Yes. Yeah.
I'd never heard of that. So what is that?
Yeah, so tiering is a large part of my practice.
Okay.
It's called epiphora is the medical term for it. And tiering can be due to a multitude of reasons. It can be due to overproduction of tears because your eyes are dry or they're irritated or something like that. It can be due to eyelid malposition, meaning if someone has an entropion on, as I mentioned previously, where the eyelid is turning inward, or the eyelid is pulling away from the eyelid, or an ectropion, like I mentioned, then the eyelids can't pump the tears to where they're supposed to go to drain. And then the last thing is the drainage system, which the tears drain in the upper and lower inner corners of your upper and lower eyelid. They drain into little ducts and tubes into your nose, actually. So when I think of tearing, I think of it like a faucet. There can be too much water coming in. There's a problem with the sink that it can't get the water to where it needs to go in the drain, or there can be a blockage in the drain in the right there, or it can be a blockage further down in the street. And when I see someone for tearing, I'll evaluate each of these different things. I'll look at the surface of the eye. I'll ask them about dry eyes. I'll look at their eyelid position to make sure their eyelid's in the correct position. I'll evaluate the drainage system. I have a special device where I can essentially insert this little cannula, blunt-tipped cannula, into the tear drainage system, and I flush water down. And if everything's open, they taste or they feel some salt water in their throat or in their nose. If something's blocked, then they don't taste it. And that shows that there's a problem kind of further down the system, and I can do surgery to correct that. If it's not one of those things, oftentimes I'll try the patients to treat their surface or their allergies or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'll give them some Flonase to help with the nasal congestion because, as I briefly mentioned, the tears drain into your nose.
Right.
So chronic sinus issues, nasal congestion, something that I always ask people about, or trauma, broken noses, that can also lead to tearing.
Mm-hmm. That dry eyes, that's pretty common, isn't it?
I see.
I see it all the time.
It's definitely one of the most common things that we deal with here.
And should people just, I know people, a lot of them just use those tears or something, you know, every morning they get up, do whatever. I got a couple of friends that like that. I mean, how long should you put up with that, or is it medically better to get it fixed?
Yeah, I mean, if it is due to dry eye, you know, drops are certainly a great solution. I generally, you know, I'll start patients on artificial tears and over-the-counter medications. Okay. But when it comes to, if those don't work, and the tear drainage system is normal, then I'll generally refer to my colleagues downstairs, who are dry eye specialists, and there are a ton of different products on the market to help with tearing these days. They feel like they're coming out with a new one, you know, every week.
Right.
So I'll refer to them to you know, try something different.
Mm-hmm. Now, even when you started, you know, a few years back to now, what's changed the most in procedure-wise, you know, tool-wise, to speak?
Honestly, you know, when it comes to my subspecialty, a lot of it is surgical.
Okay.
A lot of it is surgical. So, frankly, in terms of technology, things that have evolved from a technology standpoint are new types of lasers to do laser resurfacing. And there's, again, just like similar to dry eye stuff, there's a new laser that comes on the market every week. And different types of fillers, as we talked about. Mm-hmm. But honestly, when it comes to my subspecialty, a lot of it is surgical. And surgery, you know, there's people trying different types of surgeries and ways to kind of manipulate older surgeries to make them a little bit better. And that's sort of the main thing that's changed.
Sure.
But from a technology standpoint, it's less so technologically based in my hands than in one of the other ophthalmologist hands. Now, that being said, when it comes to, in particular, eyelid surgery, one thing that has certainly changed, not since I've started training, but in the past 20, 30 years, is the fact that preservation is super important. Now, what that means is preserving fat that might be around your eyes or muscle around your eyes. It used to be that you have this extra skin, you have this extra muscle or fat, and you just remove it and get rid of it. And oftentimes that's when people look like Nancy Pelosi or someone else like that.
Right.
So these days we talk about preserving volume and preserving fat. So sometimes for lower eyelid surgery, if they have bags, I'll actually reuse that fat and I'll move it into their cheek to fill in some hollows instead of just getting rid of it. Now, some people benefit from just getting rid of it because their bags are so big and they do great with that. But other people benefit by saving that fat and using it in a different way.
Right. Last couple of minutes. You've got your surgery center here, but let's talk about places you can do the surgery.
Yeah. So most surgeries I do, I can actually do under local anesthesia just in the office. We do have a beautiful new surgery center here, and certain surgeries I do have to do with an anesthesiologist under more significant sedation. However, for the vast majority of my patients, I can do everything just under local anesthesia like you're at the dentist.
Okay.
Sometimes I can give a little relaxing pill to kind of just take the nerves off a little bit. We play some music upstairs. We have a beautiful, beautiful new surgery suite where we have a great view. We bring it back. It's a little bit less stressful than being in the surgery center. And patients, I think, really, really appreciate that part.
Sure. Yeah. Now for the upper eyelid surgery, is that something where you're totally under anesthesia or you
nope.
just,
we can do that here in
really?
The clinic. Upper eyelid surgery, lower eyelid surgery, brow surgery. Like I said, I usually leave it up to the patient. So I'll, we had talked about evaluating patients beforehand
and
what that looks like. And usually at the end, I'll let them know we can do it in the surgery center with an anesthesiologist and more sedation, or we can do it here in the clinic.
Okay. Well, great information. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much.
Once again, if you're just joining us, we're Colorado Eye Consultants. Check them out at coloradoeyeconsultants.com. We've been talking with Dr. Carl Revhun, and their number here is 303-730-0404. And again, highly recommend Colorado Eye Consultants. As I mentioned a few months ago, did my cataract surgery, Dr. Fish. And I tell you, if it has to deal with the eye, they can probably handle it here at Colorado Eye Consultants with all their different specialists. So give them a call, 303-730-0404. This is Haystack Help Radio. We'll be back with more right after this.
Riding an e-bike will make you feel like a kid again. Just try it. Hi, I'm Randy Kranzi, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are a fun way to ride around town. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. We have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Come take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
Here's why you need personal injury attorney Kevin Flesh on your side. He understands the way the jury thinks. In the context of a personal injury case, you've been hurt by someone else's negligence. The idea is that you're going to try to recover so that you can get back to where you were just prior to that incident occurring. What that really means from a jurist's perspective is that you're going to be asking them to award you money. So when we talk about fairness, we're talking about six people that you don't know. Those six people view the evidence and make a unanimous decision that will decide what the fair value is. When you're the one who's hurt, you have a good idea of what you think it's worth. The question is, can you persuade those other individuals whom you don't know and were witnesses to believe that's what the case is worth? Kevin Flesh understands the way the jury thinks. Call now for a free consultation, 303-806-8886.
You're listening to 560 KLZ, your home station.
Welcome to Your Health Matters, sponsored by Integrated Health Systems. Traditional medicine has left you frustrated. You've seen doctor after doctor searching for answers, only to feel more confused than ever. Chiropractic neurologist Dr. Shane Stedman, along with his team at Integrated Health Systems, does the detective work you need to identify causes, not just treat your symptoms. Using a team approach to combine functional medicine with neurology, Integrated Health Systems spends the necessary time with each client to find out what's really going on. Thanks to Dr. Stedman and his team, many clients who struggle with debilitating health issues have finally found relief. Now, Haystack Help Radio proudly presents Your Health Matters.
And we'd like to welcome you to Your Health Matters, as mentioned, brought to you by Integrated Health Systems. Always a free initial consult now, 303-781-5617. Nurse practitioner Sharon Blumenthal joins us today. Sharon, how are you?
I'm doing well. I am excited.
Yeah.
coming to an end for the summer, but fall is my favorite season.
I know, mine too. Yeah, I love it. Love this time of year. I'm starting to see some little bit cooler days as well. And so, it's awesome for sure. Hey, let's kind of reset. It's been a little while since you've been on. I think you're the busiest one there. All the other ones get to come on quite frequently, but you're always busy. So kind of set the scene of why a nurse practitioner, is in a practice like this with integrated health systems and the benefits for the customer, client.
Right. Yeah. So basically, it's really a rare thing to find a family provider with a chiropractor. And so we just partnered because a lot of the clients that come in to see Dr. Stedman or Dr. Maynard for chiropractor type care, they're also looking sometimes for a primary physician to help them with all their other medical needs. And it's kind of nice to have it all under one roof.
Right. Yeah, it really is. And then, this allows because most, chiropractors, they don't write necessarily prescriptions and things like that. And then that allows folks to be taken care of because you're there, right?
Right. And then so they'll be talking to Dr. Stedman or Dr. Maynard or even Elizabeth, our nutritionist. And, they're like, I don't have anyone that's following me right now with my other medical conditions, or I want to go in and just check how I'm doing. Is there anyone here that could help me out, do labs or write a prescription if I need it? And then here I am. So it's really worked out well.
Right. Dr. Stedman was on a few weeks ago with me, and we were just talking about from when he started, and because I knew him way back then and to today, and, through the years of us doing the show and just the growth there at the practice, that all the different elements and new things of new testing that becomes available. And, you guys stay right on top of that. And we're going to be talking about something today that we've talked about a couple of times, with you. And then Dr. Stedman did this a few weeks ago, but wanted to touch base back with you on it from your side because you're the one that does this. So, and it's punch biopsy. So let's start with kind of what is a patient feeling? What symptoms are they having or whatever that they come in where this might be suggested that, hey, we need to do this procedure?
Right. So that's a great question. So sometimes, and it really varies, but most of the time it's more addressing like tingling, numbness, burning sensation in their hands and feet, like nerve pain. And so, this is looking at small fiber neuropathy, doing the punch biopsy. So, and also like little nerve fibers, they're everywhere throughout the body. So even someone that has some issues with their blood pressure or issues with their heart rate, they also could be good candidates for the punch biopsy. So it's not just, what we think of as a neuropathy. It also can address other systems in the body.
Right. And so I guess we can just kind of walk through the process here. So then, you decide that you want to do this, and then let's talk about, site selection. Where do you take this from? Where are your choices as a nurse practitioner to extract this tissue?
Right. So, like you said, so Dr. Stedman or Dr. Maynard would, see this patient, and if these symptoms – are there, then they will then recommend this punch biopsy. And basically, so it's going to try to rule out the small fiber neuropathies. So then another condition or another symptom would be they can't sense hot or cold.
Oh, okay.
So they're like, I don't know if I can't really sense that temperature change. So that's another type symptom that someone might be experiencing to be a good candidate for the punch biopsy. Okay. So it's a real quick procedure. And so they would come in, they would be set for this procedure. It's about a 30 to 45 minute total with the paperwork and everything else. And basically we just, it's on the, so sometimes we do 4 sites or sometimes we'll punch biopsy 2 sites.
Okay. And where would that normally be on the body? The from the arm, leg?
So it's from the leg.
Leg. Okay.
So, right. So it's from the thigh and the calf.
Okay.
So So I would either do like just a left side or a right side, depending on the severity of what we're looking for or ruling out.
Mm-hmm.
So the patient is prepped. We talk to them about what the procedure entails, give them, you know, all the information they'll need. They sign a consent prior, and then we just numb that area really well so they don't feel anything.
Right.
Maybe a little pressure. And then basically, we just take that little sample. It's a circular piece of skin about 3 millimeters wide, and we just remove it, and we send it to the lab, and then pathology looks at that and then basically counts the nerve fibers in this piece of tissue.
Mm-hmm.
It's so amazing.
It's super
amazing how they could do that. And it's called the intraepidermal nerve fiber density. And so then they count the nerve fibers in this little piece of tissue that I just took from this patient. And they either have a normal density, reduced density, or borderline results. And then that confirms if or not they have that small fiber neuropathy in order for us to then offer different treatments.
Right. And how long, you know, I have to go back. I used to use the word pressure, and it kind of cracks me up because doctors, nurses, they all love this. You might feel a little stick, or you might feel a little pressure. Y'all like that term. Yeah, and we're like, a little stick? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I know.
So how long does it take? So you take tissue, you send that out, I assume, to a lab or something. How long does it usually take to get those results back?
It's about 2 weeks.
Okay.
It's about a 2 week time frame. And then as soon as we get those results back, of course, you know, we look them over and then have the patient come back in and then talk about what the results showed and then some of the recommendations for treatment to hopefully repair those nerves that were damaged.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, bring that back again.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more frustrating than feeling bad, going and getting, and I'll just use blood work or something, and everything comes back normal. You know, it's not that you want something to be wrong, but you want to find out why. And so I would assume, you know, you guys have been doing this for a little while now. I mean, if something comes back and, you know, it doesn't really show anything, then I guess Dr. Stedman, Dr. Maynard, then just say, okay, we can rule that out. And then they just start focusing on other different ways to treat the patient, right?
That's exactly, yeah, you said it perfectly. That's exactly right. You know, punch biopsies for neuropathy is the gold standard. I mean, it really, really tells the tale. So if that were to come back in a positive light, meaning that we figured out why that person is feeling the way they are, the good news is there's so many different then remedies to offer, whether it's medication, you know, or topical treatment, physical therapy. It could be as easy as a lifestyle change.
Mm-hmm.
It could be as easy as controlling their blood sugars.
Right.
That help with neuropathy. So it's really it's just a great tool to offer.
Right. Nurse practitioner Sharon Blumenthal is with us. It's Integrated Health Systems, 303-781-5617. As I said at the beginning, they offer a free initial consult. Just tell them you heard them here on Your Health Matters. Okay, so then after you do that, this is a very small, from the way you guys describe it, a very small punch, so to speak. So there's no stitches or anything like that. It's just kind of clean it up and Band-Aid, I guess, right?
That's it. Yeah, there's nothing to stitch up. We clean it after, and then we put a Band-Aid on, and then basically they might have a little, they might have slight bruising, bleeding at the site, but that's really it. It heals. The calf one heals really quickly. Within a couple of days, it's already closed. The thigh one might take a little bit longer just because of the bigger area, but and so that might take about a week to heal. But yeah, it just closes and you're good to go. There's really no, we make sure that it gets kept clean and that they wash it with soap and water once the Band-Aid's removed, and it just heals on its own.
So would it ever be appropriate, like after they complete treatment and we feel like we've made some real progress here, where they might repeat that and see what a test might show again, or is this a one and done type test?
No, we would want them to repeat. So once, once the treatment is rendered and they, we figure out which treatment is best for that particular patient, then we would ask that we repeat the punch biopsy and look at, the regeneration of the nerves. And as far as time-wise, it just depends, again, on the severity of the neuropathy, but usually we would want them to repeat it about 6 months down the road.
Right.
And just see if the treatment made a difference.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing anything with patients that you've done this so far with? Are you seeing any common, denominator is the right word or whatever, that you're seeing some, things with each patient, like, man, each one of these patients, has this exact thing? Or does it vary quite a bit in some of the symptoms?
It varies for sure, but it seems consistent with the temperature issue and the numbness tingling in the feet and hands. And so they differentiate that as far as is it what type of neuropathy it is. But usually when the patients come in, it's very similar with what they're experiencing. It kind of falls into the same neuropathy as kind of neuropathy. And so they've tried everything out there and nothing seems to really do anything.
Right.
And so they come in here and say, I've tried this medication or that treatment. Do I truly have a neuropathy or is it something else that I don't even know? So when we do this punch biopsy, it delineates and it tells us, yes, you absolutely have small fiber neuropathy, and the treatment that you were doing may not be the treatment that we're going to recommend, and we're going to look at something different.
Mm-hmm. And neuropathy, that can be a whole big thing, and it can affect people different ways, I guess. But I've known a few people that have had it, and it is something that's really, I don't know if debilitating is the right word, but it is a nightmare for a lot of people, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. It is. Yes. It keeps people awake at night, the pain and the tingling and then the numbness that goes along with it. It affects people, their quality of life.
Right.
And so, when they know that we do these here and we can maybe get to that, give them some answers and give them some, treatments, they are just so happy. If we could get to that, place where we could hopefully fix it and repair those nerves,
sure,
it could make a world of difference.
Right. What kind of age range of people? What would you say your youngest patient to oldest range patient is so far?
Yeah. So I had a gentleman in his 30s. Actually two, and then all the way up until my oldest patient was in their 70s.
Wow. Okay.
So there's a 40 year span.
Yeah. Equal opportunity employer is this stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Right. That's crazy. Well, hey, what would you say to the listener then? If you're feeling this, if you're suffering with these two or three things, you should come in and try this. What would be the few things you would throw out there?
I would say pain, hands and feet. I would say tingling and numbness. would be big, but pain is huge. Mm-hmm. Neuropathy, like you said, could be just a nightmare. And it's not, and I know a lot of people associate neuropathy with diabetes, like a diabetic neuropathy,
right.
But
yeah.
It can actually be from, they don't really know, they don't have a definitive etiology for why people have nerve damage, but it can also be toxins. It could be some autoimmune conditions that people might have that they don't know. So it's not just diabetes. It's other things that might be causing that.
Right, right. Again, the number 303-781-5617. Hey, if this is you or someone you know is suffering with something like this, tell them to give Integrated Health Systems a call. 303-781-5617. Anything on that that we left out that you want to touch on? If not, I was going to have you switch over and talk about your IV therapy. But if you've got anything else you want to mention on the punch biopsy, free to do that.
No, I think, I think we did well. I think we covered most of everything.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. And so your IV therapy. Now, let's just, and the reason why you were, we'd be a little bit later here with the show today, because you had a patient with this. So let's just take the characteristics of that one patient that came in today, of why they came in for IV, and then let's talk about what the cocktail was that you came up with for them.
Okay. So, a patient came in today, middle-aged, and she suffers from general inflammation. When she first came to me, she's been coming for quite a while now, she could not, and I think I might have mentioned this in a previous time, but she came in and she could not wear shoes.
Oh, you did. Yep, yep.
Close shoes. And now I see her today. And it's been over a year now that she's been coming in pretty routinely for glutathione. And she she came in today with tennis shoes again. And I thought, wow. And she showed me her feet and her toes, and the inflammation is probably 75% down.
Wow.
From what it was. And she had such pain in her feet from the inflammation that she continued to come in and be consistent with the glutathione IV, and it really showed that it worked.
And I know you can't remember everything about every patient's history, but do you recall if she had been suffering with this for a long time and had tried a lot of other things?
She had. Yep. She actually got West Nile a long, long time ago when she was out of the country. She was in Germany for a while, and she got West Nile, and ever since then she had gone from, you know, doctor to doctor to doctor to get different treatments, and she got a lot better, but not totally 100%, and she still had that swelling and inflammation throughout the body. And so when she heard about glutathione IV, she tried it with me, and it seemingly really helped a great deal with keeping that inflammation down, and she feels better. She's so excited that she can, you know, wear all types of shoes now. That's her main thing.
Right.
But her joints, her hands, just everything feels so much better.
Right. What's the normal span of time between IVs for people? I mean, I guess there's, and what would be a reason someone would do some close together rather than doing them, you know, one a week or one a month or whatever the case is? So kind of explain the thought process there and just how often and how many times in a month or whatever.
Right. So usually for new conditions or new diagnoses, usually we do like a once a week for about 6 to 8 weeks of that particular IV. So if it's an acute issue where they're really trying to kind of get on top of things and just really kind of slam that condition, you know, right away up front. If it's something that's been for quite a while and they're just kind of looking to see, you know, would this add, you know, would this be a benefit for that person, they might come in twice a month, maybe once a month. But in the beginning stages, I always recommend like a once a week for a good 6 to 8 weeks, just to see, is this truly something that is going to show some improvement.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you, what determines what you put in the IV from the symptoms they describe, and maybe go through the last few patients and of thoughts of, you know, what they were going through and then what you decided would be best for them?
Right. So we have several different options. So we have NAD, which is a supplement that that folks could do at home. They could take it orally, but again, intravenous is a great way to start the ball rolling. So NAD, I would recommend or suggest for those that have some type of a maybe a brain injury, or they're aging and they feel like their cognition isn't where it was. Brain fog, memory lapse, those type of things. Now, NAD basically supports the total body, all cells. But a lot of times, I really like to institute or recommend NAD for those folks that are coming in that have some brain changes with thought or memory.
Mm-hmm.
That's my recommendation for that subgroup. Then glutathione is basically for detoxification of the liver. It's for inflammation and for immune support. So for those that come in with, they feel inflamed, their gut might be inflamed, they're having issues, digestive issues, I would recommend glutathione.
Right. And then sometimes you can just do some vitamins just to do something like that. What are some of the things you've done there?
Right. So it's called the Myers cocktail. It's after, I think his name was John. John Myers. He kind of came up with this concoction of vitamins, but it's great. It's the B vitamins, B12, B complex. It has some vitamin C. It has some zinc, magnesium, calcium. So it's a slew of great, trace minerals and vitamins. And that's for those that might be just feeling a little like energy zap, or they're coming in from out of town and altitude. They maybe get some, a little bit of altitude sickness from coming from sea level, or they had a hard weekend of maybe some over celebrating. So
right.
So they'll come in and just get replenished with fluid and vitamins, and they feel like $1 million by the time they walk out the door.
Gotcha. Wow. Sharon Blumenthal is with us again, nurse practitioner for Integrated Health Systems. I said free initial consult. Just call and let them know you heard them here on Your Health Matters. So what would be the time people would need to set aside for these? Do some of these take a little longer, the way the drip needs to be a little bit slower, and some you can run a little faster? What would be a range of time for IVs?
Yeah, so anywhere between 20 minutes to about an hour to an hour and a half. So,
okay.
Right. So just like you said, Scott, some of the IVs take a little longer. They just need to be infused a little slower. So, depending on the IV, we pretty much set that appointment accordingly to that time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they know, when they set the appointment about how long they'll be here.
Right. And there's so many of these places out there, and I want to be careful because I'm sure there's some good places out there that regulate things. But I also want to put a warning out there is you should know who you're seeing for this, right? And knowing where they get their fluids from and vitamins, whatever the supplements, where they get those from, different things like that. So would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going into your body, and you want to make sure that, that it's coming, from somewhere, reputable, that the pharmacies that are compounding these IV fluids are known, and we respect that. So all of the pharmacies that we go through are here in the U.S., and I know them. Talk to the pharmacist. I know them firsthand, so yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything in any of the, I just call them ingredients, with your whole plethora of choice, that you can't mix together? Or pretty much all of these different things, depending on the patient's needs, you can mix safely for them?
Right. So usually the ones that I cannot mix in the same, in the same bag, I'll just piggyback after. So a lot of times, like, let's say, for instance, I'll come in for a Myers cocktail, which is the vitamin mix, and they also want perhaps a glutathione IV. So what I'll do is I'll just piggyback that after the Myers is in. I will then infuse the glutathione, so I don't actually mix it together. Some of them, they just don't mix well, so I just infuse it after or before. So one person, she just came in on Monday, and she had three different IVs, and she got all three separate bags. And she was here for a little bit of time, I would say, but she got it all, and I just mixed them separately.
Wow. And that, I think that's key, too, is that, you know, they're handmade, so to speak, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's another thing. Yes. Yes.
Right. So, yeah, I see that as being a big benefit, too. Sharon, a lot of information here, but folks, look, here's the thing. If you have been searching, like the young lady we talked about earlier had been going through this for many years, have you just accepted a way of life to just think, hey, I just can never feel better? Don't do that. Give Dr. Stedman, the team there. Again, they've got Elizabeth as a nutritionist, Sharon. There's a nurse practitioner, Dr. Maynard, Dr. Stedman. Give them a chance. I'm telling you, they have been great for us on a personal level, my wife and I, and many, many, many friends of mine, and, of course, listeners here to the show. So the number 303-781-5617, and like I say, free initial consult. Just tell them you heard them here on Your Health Matters. So, Sharon, we appreciate your time, and I'm sure I'll see you over there soon.
All righty. Thank you so much, Scott.
All right.
It's been fun.
Thank you. That's Sharon Blumenthal, nurse practitioner for Integrated Health Systems. Thanks for being with us today for Your Health Matters.
Call Integrated Health Systems now for a free consultation. 303-781-5617. That's 303-781-5617. To book your consultation online, visit integratedhealthdenver.com. Thank you for listening to Your Health Matters. Be sure to join Dr. Shane Stedman live every Monday at 12:30 p.m. on KLZ 560.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.